Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. Important to note that everything is for entertainment purposes only. Please do speak and meet with a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. And also, please meet and speak with your GP before making any health or beauty decisions.
Okay. Getting Savvy, Melissa. Here we are again. Lot to talk about. I think everybody's obviously, you can't avoid knowing that there's tariff wars going on, trade wars going on.
Yeah.
And the tensions are increasing.
Yeah. The pun I like is they're terrifying. It's funny because I made a joke a couple of weeks ago when I called them scariffs. And I'm like, how did I miss out that terrifying would have been a better play on words than scariffs?
I don't know. I think scariffs is kind of cute.
But it's terrifying. It is like, you can't escape news on the markets right now. It's everywhere. And it's like, it's actually like overwhelming and dizzying. And if you feel like you blink, it's a new environment. It's very hard to know what to do right now.
Well, that's a good point. And that's maybe a good lead in terms of just kind of recapping what has been going on. So, you know, we know that that obviously the markets haven't been favorable towards these tariffs. So we've seen a big drawdown in the markets. You know, some of the stocks that you and I've been talking about since we started this, you know, are down 20, 30, 40%. And then we had a bit of a reprieve the other day when President Trump put a 90-day pause on the tariffs. But at the same time, there's been a real ramp up in tensions between the US and China. So I'm sure you saw, but Beijing increased the tariffs on US goods to 125%. The White House has 145% tariffs on Chinese goods. So that's, go ahead.
So I just want to, so for the average person, like, what does this mean? Like, what does that mean? Does it mean that things that we get from China are going to be so much more expensive? Does it mean that the price of our Apple products is going to go up like crazy, or iPhone's going to be more expensive? Like, what is it? Like, how does this translate?
Right.
Yeah.
So that is a good question. And what it means is that any product coming into, you know, the United States and or Canada gets this levy put on it. So it makes the product less affordable, right? You have to, you're going to be paying more to be able to buy that product. So what happens? You either pay more or you don't buy the product. And so that translates into companies being able to sell less of their product potentially. And therefore, when you think about the markets and why they go down, if they can't sell as much of their product, the revenue line is going to be lower. Therefore, the profits are lower, the earnings are lower, and that's why these stocks come down, because the valuations, what we thought the company was worth because of what they could sell and what their profits are, isn't as valuable to me anymore. And that's why the stocks come down. And for everyday consumers, and we heard this from one of the companies I was looking at, because it's earnings season in the United States right now. We just kicked off earnings season and the US earnings season always starts before the Canadian one. So that's what I'm talking about, US right now. The big banks reported today, not, you know, fine results. But it's always, you know, we've talked about this, it's the forward-looking statements. What are these CEOs saying? And there are some CEOs out there saying that they do see a recession. For example, Delta, they reported better than feared results. And their guidance was better than feared, but the company CEO of Delta did say that growth has stalled and the economy is acting like it's going into a recession. So bringing it back to the tariffs, you know, you would think that with that kind of comment, he's saying, okay, not as many people are buying plane tickets because maybe they do want that Apple product, or maybe they do want something that's made in China. And it's either going to cost them more. So you're going to see consumers start to shift. They've got fewer dollars. They're really just going to be buying what they really want or what they really need. Does that help answer how tariffs impact?
Yeah, but I feel like we're, you know, the way I sort of look at it is we're being hit two ways. One is if you are in the stock market, then we're seeing these tariffs leading to the value of our portfolio go down, the stock go down. So you're being hit that way. And then the cost of the actual products, it looks like it's like inflationary, that the price of things is going to increase. Because how doesn't it? If all of a sudden the companies have to pay more for their products, they're obviously going to put that onto the consumer. So prices are going to go up. But you have to hope that all this is for the greater good, to bring back jobs
That's right.
to, I mean, to Americans, right? So hopefully it's a little bit of short-term pain for long-term gain. I just
That's
don't
right.
know. So that's sort of how I'm understanding it. It seems like this is what we have to do now in order. So you have to look at it the way I'm trying to tell myself is you have to look at it like an opportunity. Like if stocks go down, it's a better opportunity to buy and get into the market, get things at a better value, at a better price, some stocks you might have been looking at if you have time to wait. And also think that maybe it will be better for us in the long run because maybe Trump and the US government feels like they have to do this in order to not lose out to China in the future.
That's
That's what
right.
I'm trying to
That is the
understand.
theme.
Yeah, that's the, but
That
I
is the
will tell
theme.
you that what I'm seeing, a lot of people are feeling the pinch and not booking as much travel, not booking as much travel to the US, not because we're mad. It's funny, people think there's a sentiment like, oh, Canadians are so mad at the US government and that's why we're not going to the US. But really, I think it's just too expensive.
It's expensive,
It's
yeah.
expensive. Prices of flights are high. People just don't have that much dispensable
Yeah.
income right now. And I think people are also really worried about their portfolios and worried about their job security too, because as companies, right, they have to then figure out ways to cut costs. So,
100%. If their input costs are going up, so if you're a manufacturer and you need products from China or wherever you need it from, and well, let's pick China and so your input costs, if you want to make a widget, just went up, then you might actually you're going to look to cut jobs because
100%.
it's going to be difficult to pass on all of that increased production cost
To
to the
the
consumer. And on that note, it's really important to always kind of keep track of some of the economic data points. I know that might sound boring to people, but it's not boring. It's just kind of an economic data point is just a data point. It's like how much are people spending? Where is inflation going? And this is really important. There's Michigan has an inflation expectation data point. So in other words, what are people's expectations for inflation? And we just got this reading, this data point, and the 1 year outlook is up to 6.7%. That is where people think in this survey that the inflation will be in 1 year, 6.7%. That's the highest number we've seen since 1981. Think about that. That's a
Scary.
massive change.
And going back, wasn't that when interest rates were crazy high? Weren't interest rates in the 80s like, I thought to buy
Well,
a house back then, your interest rate
correct.
was like 12% or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's
Yes.
scary.
Yeah. So, and interestingly as well, because of this, sticky inflation and the concerns that the tariffs will cause inflation, let's bring this back to the US Federal Reserve, right? The US Federal Reserve makes decisions on the interest rate environment. And they don't want to cut rates because they're afraid, if remember, if you lower interest rates, people have more money in their pocket because they're not paying as much in interest on their, consumer, on their credit card, on their autos or what have you. So it's stimulative. If you cut rates, you've got more money in your hands and you've got more money to go out and purchase goods. So you've got more money purchasing fewer goods, essentially, because more people can afford them, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So the US Federal Reserve, because they think these are a number of Fed presidents, because they think that there's going to be more inflation, they don't want to cut rates and increase even those inflation expectations. So in
Right.
other words, People
Don't
aren't
expect
going
a rate cut.
to, don't expect a rate cut. That's in the United States. Now, we do have the BOC next week, and there are expectations that they will be cutting here in Canada, just FYI.
Right.
So you're hearing from various company CEOs, but what I also, you know, want to point out, like Goldman Sachs is an example, has a 0.5% fourth quarter 2025 GDP growth rate. So in other words, there's a lot of strategists out there saying they don't expect much growth this year, like call it 1%, because again, to your point, if you're a CEO and your costs are increasing and therefore you're going to pass some of that on to the consumer is not going to be able to afford as much. There's going to be less revenue, less profit. All that translates into the sum of the, you know, the sum of the parts, right? All these different companies, there's just going to be less growth in the United States. That's not what I'm saying. That's what, you know, strategists, economists, people are saying. And, there's many people that are not expecting much growth. Now, I will say, though, to your point, Melissa, it was interesting. There's an article, you often like to bring up Warren Buffett, and he apparently just issued some bonds and to the tune of $628 million. And if you remember, because you were the one that brought it up, he had a cash sum of about $320 billion last year. So the fact that he just issued some samurai bonds, these are Japanese bonds, to the tune of $628 million. There's a guy who I buy his research. His name's Larry McDonald, and it's called The Bear Trap. So he's really kind of on, more on the institutional side. It's a great, great newsletter. His comment with Buffett doing this was that he's, you know, raising this money, he's going to, I quote, buy this puke festival with both hands. So when the market puke, so when the market falls as much as it does, another term on Wall Street is like the market's puking. I mean, it sounds awful, but that's just another term. So I'm teaching you some of the lingo. Interesting. Cause to your point, these stocks have come down significantly. And you and I talked about it last time, sharpen the pencils. Let's see, you know, what we want to buy. And then the market continued to come down. So you're seeing a lot of people going, ugh, you know, is it time to buy? We'll find out when Buffett did buy and what he bought, because it comes out in a quarterly report called the 13F filings or 13D, 13D, 13D. Yeah. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
So, you know, in the book I read by him, he uses this expression, you have to load the bear, meaning you have to get your cash ready and loaded so that when that bear market does happen, you're ready and you have cash. The thing is, you can only take advantage of a bear market and lower stock prices if you have money. You don't want to sell, then sell low to then just go buy again. You have to have cash reserves. So, interesting. Yeah, he's been getting, you know, people's Instagrams are blowing up with Warren Buffett videos and quotes, and
are they,
you know, because in times like this, it's so uncertain and so confusing. Mm-hmm. People look to wisdom and look to somebody who's very experienced to see what they're doing. But it's almost like, this is what I was saying the other day, like, it's almost like you don't even have time to figure out what to do, because by the time you blink your eye, the situation's changed. And I almost feel like it's unfair for the individual investor to compete with what it feels like are computer systems that are just set to, when certain things go low, buy. When certain things go high, sell. Like, it just seems so manufactured. Like, I don't know how else to explain that. It just sort of feels like it's rigged.
Well, I mean, I think that there are some quant trading programs that do that. But quite frankly, it doesn't mean that they're right. So I think that there's always actually an opportunity for the individual.
Did you buy the dip?
Me? I bought the dip like 4 weeks ago and it's gone down.
Before it did.
Yeah. Well, these stocks were down significantly, some of them. But I am going to, like, that's actually on my to-do list today. Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything specifically you're looking at?
I think we talked a little bit about it. Like, I'm looking at Apple. I know I have to understand the situation with China better in terms of their production and what that might mean for them. But the stock is down so significantly. I think Google is down significantly. The banks are down significantly. I mean, a lot of things. Uber is down. You know, there's a lot of names. You know, and I'm also glad though, I do have a diversified portfolio on a lot of fronts. You know, and I mentioned to you a while back, like I bought AT&T, like when it was down like 30% from here, it's been a great stock. Philip Morris, so tobacco companies I bought. So some of those, you know, dividend payers getting paid. So even though the stocks can be down, I'm getting paid a nice dividend. So I think that's still a really smart approach.
You know, when I used to listen to people speak about it, when they would say like, there's been a correction, you know, made me think like, oh, does that mean those stocks were overvalued and now there's a correction, meaning they're back at a more normal? And then I realized it was an actual definition to what a correction means. That, I mean, you could say it better, but it's something like when things are down 10%, they call it a correction. And when it's down 20%, it's a bear market. I didn't realize it had an actual term. I just thought they were saying it's a correction, it's fixed.
Oh, it's fixed.
It's fixed, corrected.
That's
no more problems.
Funny. But, that's
yeah,
actually
like, you know, people take it for granted when, you know, like part of understanding a discipline is understanding the lingo. You know, it's the same thing in medicine, like learning a new language. And so with economics, you're learning the language of economics. But to the average person, when they hear the word correction, they just think all better.
It's been corrected and it's good and let's go in. Right.
Yeah.
No,
like you didn't understand that actually has that. And same with bear market, that there's an actual definition. So
yes.
Anyhow.
No, I think that's a great point. I think that there are some, you know, very well-known investors out there right now who are not ready to buy. They're not, because there's too much uncertainty. So you've got those ones. And you've got equally smart institutional investors who are buying, you know, and even if you're, and the way to do it too, is you can buy, if, you know, if you've got, say you had $5,000 or $10,000, you can do it in $2,500 increments, right? So you don't buy it all today. You leg into your position. So that's one way to do it. So, but Melissa, why don't you talk a little bit about what's on your docket?
Okay. So, first I was going to talk about HPV and throat cancer in men. So I read an interesting article. So I don't know if you've heard of HPV. It stands for human papillomavirus. It's the virus that's associated with genital warts, but also the oncogenic strain of the virus is associated, we think of it as being associated with cervical cancer. So women, you know, get pap smears. And now the pap smear has been replaced actually with just testing for HPV. And it's now HPV test, because if you have HPV, then you're at risk for cervical cancer. But what's interesting is that HPV is now responsible for more throat cancer in men than it is cervical cancer in women. And part of the reason is we have good screening in women, and that girls have been getting the HPV vaccine now for, I think, almost 20 or 15 years or something now. Yeah. So the reason is, and I don't know if you ever heard Michael Douglas, he was probably the most famous celebrity who was diagnosed with throat cancer. And he made a joke, you know, he was with that embarrassed, I think, Catherine Zeta-Jones, saying, well, too much oral sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that is the reason for throat cancer in men. So the more oral sex a man has with a female partner, the more likely he is to acquire HPV. And HPV, men have a much harder time clearing HPV for some reason than women do. So HPV is a virus. And so almost 80% of people that are sexually active, it's normal, we'll get HPV, exposed to HPV at some point. But our immune system is able to clear that virus. But for some reason, in men, more than in women, the immune system doesn't seem to clear out the virus as much. So the HPV tends to live on a man's tonsils and in the back of the tongue. And after years, it can transform into oropharyngeal cancer. So more and more men are being diagnosed with throat cancer. I think it's like the leading cause of cancer in men.
Which number?
The fifth leading. It says here, The more partners men have oral sex with, the more likely they are to get HPV, and the more likely they are to get the HPV-related throat cancer. So one study in the Scientific Dental Journal in 2022 showed that men who've had more than five oral sex partners are more than 68% more likely to get throat cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. So the good news is there is a vaccine.
Right.
So Gardasil is the name of the vaccine for HPV, and it's now given universally to girls in high school as well as boys. But for some reason, there seems to be more uptake in girls. I think a lot of people still have the idea that, this is more of a girl thing, you know?
Yep.
But reality is that it can be a male disease too. So one way to encourage people is that it also can help prevent genital warts, and it can prevent cervical cancer and throat cancer in the future. And the good news with this type of throat cancer, though, is it is 80 to 90% curable.
Wow.
So bottom line, if you have a lump in your throat, if you have a sore throat that's not going away, if you take antibiotics and you still have a sore throat, don't be embarrassed to talk to your doctor, because, you know, we're seeing more of a rise in this diagnosis, and it is highly curable. So it's something worth talking about, thinking about. I thought that was just an interesting.
Well, just, I picking up on that, I heard something the other day that I thought was interesting. I wanted to triple check it because the number is quite astounding to me. But 90% of the input for antibiotics in America comes from China.
Really?
Yes, I'm going to check that so nobody hold me to it, but I did hear that the other day. So when you think about not relying, this goes back to our whole COVID experience for everybody, but not relying on foreign countries for critical inputs or products, I thought that I was like, that to me was fascinating, because in sitting here in Canada, you know, we don't want to be susceptible to not being able to produce
our own
antibiotics.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Well, there was a big thing going up on how they're saying stock up on your Ozempic, price is going to go up, you know, because of tariffs. So, you know, that we are seeing something we are thinking about, you know, even in our own practice, when we look at getting, you know, different brands of botulin toxin, whether it's Botox or Nuceiva, or Dysport, looking at where they're manufactured and if prices are going to go up because of tariffs. And it's something I just think the price of a lot of the things that we're used to paying for is going to go up.
Yeah, I think you're
You
right.
Know?
And obviously
I
the
think
inflation. Yeah. And the inflation expectation data point agrees with you. Right.
It's interesting though. Here, I heard something on some podcast, someone, you know, theorizing that, you know, maybe Trump is doing these tariffs to, and I didn't really understand what they were saying, is to ultimately lower interest rates so that when they refinance their debt, they'll refinance
That's
it at a lower rate. But I don't
That's
understand
right.
how that makes any sense at all, because with inflation, don't you get higher interest rates?
Well, so what happens, this is the bond market, right? And you're right. We don't necessarily get higher rates. You would think that you would, or it would keep up with inflation. So you are right. But what the belief is that, that through the turmoil of the tariffs, that you would see people buying U.S. treasuries as a safe haven, as a safe haven.
Yeah.
So the bond market, you know, if you don't want to own equities, let's buy bonds. It's safer. So there, it's an inverse relationship in the fixed income market with bonds. So the price of the bond goes up, right? People are buying it. When you're buying, you tend to push the price up because there's more people buying that. And therefore the interest rate goes down. So it's the mechanics of the market cause that. Now, what's happened over the past week, 2 weeks, which is interesting, is, and so this is a theme in the market right now that's going on, and or a dynamic in the market, is that you've actually seen a 3% decline in the US dollar. And the reason for that is because people are essentially saying that, wait a second, I might not, you know, if we're doing deglobalization, de-dollarization, you don't need as many US dollars if you're not going to be buying as many, like if you're a foreign country and you're not going to be buying and not able to buy as many US products, you don't need US dollars to do it. So you've seen a pullback in the US dollar. You've seen a pullback in the US dollar because of that factor, and also the potential that maybe they don't want to buy US treasuries. So just the opposite of what you just said, or what I said in, on your point, which was, you know, as a safe haven trade, you buy the US bonds, US treasury bonds, the rate goes down to the point on the podcast that you were listening to. But what we're seeing now is that people are saying, well, wait a second, maybe I don't want to buy those US bonds. So there's some selling pressure on the 30-year bond. So 30-year bond means 30 years out. It matures in 30 years. That's what a 30-year bond means. It comes due in 30 years. And you're seeing the price, the rate rise on those bonds. So that's a big theme going on right now. The opposite. The opposite.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Honestly, it's so unpredictable.
There's a lot of uncertainty right now. There's a lot of uncertainty, and you have to, I think, sit back and say, you know, are these companies still great? And is the value attractive to me? And we'll see what Buffett ended up.
Has the price of BRB gone down at all?
No, and that's what drives me bonkers. So I've been looking
at
buying.
I know, because I want to buy that.
I know. We both want to buy, I'll bring it up here. We both want to buy Berkshire Hathaway, BRK.B is the ticker. And that's one of the stocks that has continued to do well. I'll bring it up. And so, you know, you've asked me what's doing well. So in the past, utilities, but utilities, you know, everybody's kind of been buying that trade. So
yeah.
I don't necessarily want to buy something that the minute things get resolved, people will pull money out of their utilities and buy something else. So Apple's actually up by 4.6% today. The markets are having a good day today, but XLU is the ticker for the utilities ETF in the States. Okay. So, you know, it's done pretty well over the past month or so. I mean, it's down a couple bucks, but it's probably held in there the best. But the other thing that I want to just mention that has done very well is gold. So
right. Gold, that's what gold, TSX was up to, right? I heard that on the radio this morning.
What did you hear?
The TSX was up because gold is doing so well today. Yeah.
That's right. So I just want to mention that as you and I talk about, and hopefully people are learning, the composition of the TSX, the companies that make the Canadian economy, very different than the United States. The United States has more tech companies versus us by far, but we have more gold and more metal and more aluminum and miners. So gold, as an example, is used often as a safe haven trade, just like US treasuries are often used as a safe haven trade. So gold is helping. We're heavily weighted towards gold companies in this country versus the United States. So the TSX is up by 2%. It's important to note, in my opinion, that just because the TSX is up 2% doesn't mean the economy's strong at all, or that the rest of the economy is strong. It just means that the weighting of our market is more weighted to gold stocks, and they're performing well. So, you know, commodities are pushing it higher. And just to note, if you're wondering what kind of gold stock to buy, and it's not my recommendation, UBS, one of the big investment banks globally, upgraded Newmont to a buy today with a $60 price target. And the ticker there is NGT. So okay. I'll just see NGT. I'm just going to see where it's trading today. Well, it's trading above their price target. So it's like a lot of these gold stocks are. But anyway, yeah. But Melissa, why don't you talk to me a little bit about this low carb, low fiber diet?
Yeah. So, I don't know if you've heard, but colon cancer rates, especially in young people, are increasing. And there was a study actually done here in Toronto, University of Toronto, that showed that a low carb, low fiber diet, when combined with a strain of E. coli, will increase the rate of colon cancer. So colon polyps, which eventually turn into a colon cancer. So it's saying that, you know, if you follow one of these low carb diets and you're not getting enough fiber, specifically soluble fiber, you could weaken the mucosal barrier, the layer in your colon, therefore letting the E. coli that resides there damage the cells, making you more susceptible to polyps and cancer.
Interesting.
So it said specifically, so the study was done on mice. So this wasn't a human study. And it showed that when they gave them a low carb diet, it thinned the mucus layer in the colon, which protects against microbes. And therefore it allowed the E. coli to reach colon cells and damage their DNA. And that by adding fiber to the diet, that reduced tumor formation and helped control the inflammation. So you want to focus on sources of soluble fiber in the diet. So things like inulin, pectin, beta-glucan. So these types of soluble fiber.
What the heck
fiber.
Are those?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, huh? The only way you would recognize one of those terms is if you ever look at one of your, you know, sometimes if you look at like a protein bar, you'll notice one of the ingredients is often inulin, because it's a soluble fiber that has a, that can have a sweet taste. So they often use them as, fibers to sweeten food. So they're in some packaged foods, but obviously you want to try to get your fiber naturally. So foods high in these things are going to be berries, apples, pears, avocado. High in, I think it's pectin. Pears are high in. Citrus fruits. So you're eating your lemon whole.
Oh.
Will give you some fiber.
Oh, yeah.
So that's
forgot
kind of
I've
where
got.
You're getting some fiber.
Wow.
In the diet. Yeah. And then you want to look at other things like oats, barley. You know, I don't love barley and I don't love legumes. They hurt my stomach. So I tend to avoid those foods, but I like nuts and I like chia.
Chia
So
has a
those
lot
are
of fiber.
Great one. Yeah. And you know what's interesting? So chia, if you guys are familiar with it, it's like these little black seeds. And I got into a habit of making chia pudding. I kind of liked it. I find it's a good way to get fiber and it actually fills you up because it forms a gel-like substance that kind of fills your stomach. So I wonder, so chia is great because it's high in soluble fiber, but it's also high in omega-3. So those things, you really want to get a good sources of omega-3 in your diet. But I wondered, you know, when you put the chia seeds in the blender, because a lot of people are like, ah, I just throw it in my shake. But once you blend it up, I wondered, are you still going to get the fiber benefit? And you do. So it's
And
good
you
to
do.
know that you do. So you can make chia seed pudding, or you can put it in your smoothie in the morning. And two
Oh,
tablespoons
great.
Of chia seed, 10 grams of fiber.
Wow.
Yeah, nuts are a good one too. So a lot of people, when they're watching their weight, you know, or they're trying to eat low carb, they forget about the importance of fiber. And I see this a lot, especially with people on Ozempic. They get constipated and they're just full. So they don't feel like eating as much fiber, but it's important for your colon health. So you got to look at ways of getting that into your diet. And if you don't get it through food, then take a psyllium, like Metamucil supplement is really useful. Yeah, but you just have to make sure you drink a lot of water with it, because even though these things help you go to the washroom, if you don't have the water with it, it can actually have the opposite effect and bind you up and cause constipation. So
that's so
that
interesting.
was just
So
a good reminder. Yeah.
Can you
I mean, in my
describe
diet,
too? Yeah.
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was saying, like, in my diet, when I look at it, I get a lot. Like, so I eat a lot of baby carrots. I eat berries every single day with Greek yogurt and bran buds.
And what? And what? Brave Buds?
I love a snack that I have very often is Greek yogurt, plain Greek yogurt with berries. Usually it's like raspberries and blueberries. And then I vary it. Some days I put on bran buds. Some days I do chia seeds. Some days I do a slivered almonds or walnuts. So I try to have that as my base and then vary up the fiber that I get with it. Obviously, like salads are good. And then eating the skins of things. So like if I have like a baked potato, I'll have it with the skin.
Right.
And so
I do
with
that
your
too.
citrus, but you do this lemon drink, you know, you have it with the peel.
Yeah. What's a bran bud?
So it's a type of cereal. They're just called bran buds. I think Kellogg's makes it or something. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
And
They're
then
just
one
like
other
little.
question. Yeah. One other question too. I was talking to them the other day and they were excuse me, she's a nutritionist, and she said that like the difference in some vitamins are soluble and some vitamins are insoluble. Insoluble, can you describe what that means even?
So you're not talking about fiber here. Now you're talking about soluble.
Vitamin K, vitamin A,
fat soluble is probably what she meant.
Yes.
So vitamin D is fat soluble, meaning you don't just pee it out. It can cause harm if you take too much of it because it can accumulate in your system. Whereas vitamin Bs would be an example of non-soluble. And so if you take too much, the thought is it's not harmful because you would just excrete it in your urine. That's why they say oftentimes, you know, if you talk to people that aren't believers in vitamins, they'll say you're just creating expensive urine.
Right. So it's interesting, though, that different vitamins are like when you say fat soluble, what it goes into your fat? What does it mean? Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It stores in your fat.
Oh.
So I think it's that this is going back to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I think it's vitamin A, D, E, and K, if I remember, are the fat soluble ones. So those are the ones you have to worry about being, you can't just take it as much as you want willy nilly. And I've had a few people that decided, hey, you know, vitamin D here is good for me. I'm just going to take a ton of it. And then when I do their blood work and I test their levels, it can be in a toxic range. And I mean, yeah, so it could theoretically cause problems. So you don't want to do something healthy and then end up causing problems. So we just have to be aware of that.
Okay. So much to be aware of. Do you have something happy?
What's some happy
healthy? What? Is
well,
Botox
my next one
going to get cheaper?
Sound happy at first, but then it wasn't. It was going to be on cannabis.
Okay. Well,
so that sounds like it could be a good time. But unfortunately, what the study showed was that there's been an increasing association between cannabis and increased risk for heart attack and stroke. So specifically, the study I looked at showed that people under 50 who use cannabis regularly are more than 6 times as likely to have a heart attack than non-users. And you know, a study published a few weeks ago looked at 4.6 million adults ages 49 and younger who were healthy at the start of the study. And then they followed them along. And 100,000 of those users, when they looked at their charts, were cannabis users, marijuana users. And during the 3-year follow-up, they found that they were more likely to have a heart attack and less likely to survive the heart attack and 4 times more likely to have a stroke. So it could be that people that use marijuana also have other unhealthy lifestyle habits. Maybe they also use cocaine or other drugs that can increase cardiovascular risk. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're more sedentary. I mean, there could be other things at play, but it also has been shown that it can lead to heart rhythm changes. So some people who smoke marijuana have said, even said, I noticed that my heart races after. And that could be one of the mechanisms. It shows that the risk for heart attack increases within an hour of using marijuana.
Oh my God.
I know. And also it can make the blood vessels more difficult to contract and expand. So it could affect blood flow. So it's not, sorry, it wasn't happy news.
That's okay.
You know,
I threw
it
that
is
on
a reminder.
You.
Yeah, it is a reminder though, that we look at things like marijuana and we think, oh, you know, it's legal now. So does that, but there's a misnomer, especially among young people, thinking, well, it's legal, then it's healthy. But just because something's legal, it doesn't mean it's healthy. It means it's been decriminalized.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But same thing with alcohol. Just because you can buy it when you turn 18 doesn't mean it's, you know, there's no harms in it. So we have to think about, you know, if your doctor asks you, if you're smoking marijuana, there's a reason they're asking you for it because there's more data linking it to things like heart rhythm changes or increased risk for heart attack and stroke. And so it's just something that the doctor needs to be aware of.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Well, I'll, and I know we're going to wrap this in a second, but I'll leave you with something happy. Let me start with something not happy, which is I was going on a hike the other day and I slipped on a rock and I fell back really, really quickly, leaned to my right. But then somehow I also used my left wrist, but it's fine. But I feel like I pulled all these muscles in my ribs. I didn't fall on my ribs, so they can't possibly be broken. But my trainer said to me, he goes, well, you can pop a rib out of place, but I don't think there's anything out of place. But can you really pull your, muscles that badly?
Yes. So it's called an intercostal muscle strain. So in between your ribs, you have these things called intercostal muscles.
Okay.
And you, if you twist funny, and a lot of times when people get in a car accident or something and
Oh.
they contract all their muscles to protect themselves, you can strain those muscles. That's why you can get whiplash or lower
Oh.
back pain. And similarly, you can get these intercostal muscle strains, and it's really painful. And it can be painful when you take a deep breath or when you move in certain directions.
Yeah.
The good news
So
is it's
what?
usually Advil, like taking an anti-inflammatory helps
Okay.
and avoid aggravating activities. And it just will should resolve within a couple of weeks.
Couple weeks.
Yeah. I mean, even if you fractured a ridge or rib, there's nothing to do. It just resolves.
Can I still work out though? Like I want to work out.
Yeah, for sure. I just wouldn't do something that's going to further aggravate it. So I wouldn't do a workout, like let's say overhead muscle that's going to continually pull on that because you're just going to further inflame the area. So work out, but work a different muscle group, like work on your legs or do
Okay.
cardio or do bicep curls, something that's not going to engage that part of your
Okay.
body to give it to heal. Yeah.
Okay. So lastly then on a happy note, I did learn this past week how to breathe. Sound
Okay.
there's so not me, right? Like breath work, but anyway, I learned how to do this and the purpose of it was to then do a cold plunge. So I did a cold like
Okay.
I've learned how to do these cold plunges. And I think, we were in there I was in there for maybe 2 to 3 minutes.
Wow, that's a long cold plunch.
Yeah.
Are
And
you
I
sure it's
ducked.
very cold?
What?
You ducked your head?
And I ducked my head.
So okay, I'm going to challenge you to come with me to
Really?
Wellness House and do a cold
Okay.
plunge. There's no, I don't think your cold plunge was as cold as the Wellness House one because I don't think there would be any way that you could duck and last longer than a minute.
Oh no,
Maybe,
I
but
didn't duck for a minute. I ducked for a split second.
no, but you didn't duck for 1 second. Like I can barely get my arms in, never mind duck my whole head
Really?
in. So there's interesting data out on cold plunging. I don't know if you saw it. So they looked at
I
some
didn't.
athletes, and specifically athletes that are trying to put on muscle. So if you're trying to gain muscle, so after a workout during the recovery period, the athletes that went and cold plunged in that 24-hour recovery period did not put on nearly the same amount of muscle than the ones that didn't. So it's thought that doing the ice plunge can during the recovery period can impede muscle growth. So if you're trying
Oh.
to actively gain muscle, like if you're trying to put on muscle, I wouldn't recommend doing ice plunges and cold plunge within 24 hours of a workout. Better to do a,
Interesting.
yeah, because you need that blood flow to the muscle. It impaired, and actually, this was a real study. It was they actually did muscle biopsies on these people to look at muscle enzymes. It wasn't just like, oh, I feel like I got less muscle. No, it was a legitimate study. So I thought my issue is the opposite of most people. I love working out. I love playing tennis. I love doing Pilates, but I don't like building bulky leg muscles. I tend to be a mesomorph body type and I can make sometimes bulky legs. So I'm like, perfect. So now I'm just going to play tennis and cold plunge.
Oh
Problem
my
solved.
gosh. Well, okay, but then
Problem
do you
solved.
problem solved. But wait, I know you have to go, but do you like I think that there are still apparently a lot of benefits going from that infrared sauna to the cold plunge. And even apparently there's studies, I'll find it. It even helps your brain has to kind of almost figure out a new path because it's not used to this. Like I'll get the study, but that was described to me. But what's the benefit then? Like I'm hoping that there was still a benefit to this pain that I went through because it is painful. But then it felt good. I did it 2 days in a row.
Then it feels good after. So you do get a dopamine boost from it.
Okay.
And yeah, and there are people that still think that it's good for like shock proteins and like you said, different neural systems in terms of like being able to adapt to hot to cold. And yeah, so and I mean there's definitely lots of science for infrared sauna for sweating
Yeah.
out toxins and that for longevity, but you know, it was interesting that new data about the ice plunge in terms of muscle growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you're still going to use the ice plunge at
Oh,
your
I'm going to use
place.
it to my
Well,
advantage. I'm going to
you'll
use it to
use it. What about the rest of
Yeah, and I
us?
would still do it, but I wouldn't do it if I was actively trying to put on muscle and my muscles were
Okay.
sore 24 hours. I wouldn't do it to try to ease that pain because then you're going to also impede the muscle growth.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah, I
Okay.
actually think it's a fun thing to do, you know, on the weekend. It's a nice social, there's so many of these places like Othership and other ones that are popping up that it's like a way to be social. It's like the social wellness trend. So it's a way to spike dopamine levels, socialize with other people and have fun without relying on alcohol and,
Yeah. Well,
mental
just to
demand.
leave it on that note, like I started doing infrared sauna when I lived in Chicago, and you could rent out, just like I think at your place at Well House, right? You can rent out the infrared sauna, and I would, meet a girlfriend there, and we would stay in the infrared for 50 minutes, and it was the best way to catch up. So I was doing that
Yeah,
like
it's
eons
nice.
ago, and people should know that they can do it at your place, and it's a really great way
It, we're
to get
very
together.
busy. Like we're busy on the weekends now too, because it's fun. Like actually on the weekend, some of my girlfriends invited me to do Pilates in the morning. And then afterwards we were going to do an infrared sauna and then grab a coffee and catch up. It's just a nice, it's a nice
It's
wellness
great.
self-care thing to do. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's a happy note. We'll leave it there.
There is, that is. Okay. All right.
Yay.
Have a good weekend.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Talk to you later.